Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 114 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, joined by my co-host, Steve, and we're going to cover this week's nerd news. We're going to begin over in an entertainment talk and talk over some streaming shows that are canceled and coming. A little talk in gaming, and then we're going to move over into tech. The big story is the antitrust case against Google brought by the Justice Department last week. We've got a new competitor in the electric vehicle space. More news on hacking groups, and then some space talk with updates to SpaceX, Starlink, and NASA. There's a lot to get to. Let's get started.
Calling back all nerds.
Nerds!
All right, and welcome to episode 114. And, let's see, we've got a big week in news, and it's not all election centered. So we've got some in tech and entertainment now.
Yeah, let's live this up while we can, because I don't think it's going to be the same next week.
I think next week's gonna be a little rough. So let's go ahead and jump into I guess first we could just quickly talk about a show that I know you were a fan of. I've never seen it, I never watch anything anymore. But Mindhunter. Canceled.
Yeah,
and that stings you.
That, well, and it's not just me. It's a lot of people. This show was actually really, really good. Like Ozarks level good. It all follows the book of how the FBI kind of like forensics team was formed when they first started like actually studying serial killers. So it all takes place in I'm pretty sure the 70s. And yeah, it follows around this FBI agent that was pioneering, you know, the fact that they had all these serial killers locked up, but nobody ever talks to them to figure out why they do it and how knowing the why could actually prevent future cases and help solve cold cases. And they do a really good job of finding real life serial killers and putting them in the show. And doing the actual interviews that they have in real life. There's a lot of documentation on this historically. So they base it off that. And like when they had Manson on, the guy looked just like Manson. All these serial killers that they go and interview, they look just like them. They do a really good job with casting, really good job with acting. We reported on this like 6 months ago, maybe even longer, about the contracts holding up starting the show, because in their third season, everybody's contract went up. And they didn't have any negotiations going on. So there was speculation that it was going to be a long break just because they just didn't have their shit together yet. And then COVID hit. And now it just looks like the showrunner is going to say, fuck it. I'm just done, which is really shitty for fans because they left off on some cliffhangers. They got a really long 2-season story arc going that was going to really ramp up in season 3. This is kind of fucked.
Yeah, I think it goes into what we talk about, like these actors and stuff that sign on for these streaming service, like these purely streaming service shows. I think they just have to realize, man, the negotiating power is not with you as the actor anymore. It is not. And the fact that these networks needed these big name recognition shows that they could pay the most popular shows significant amounts of money in contracts, because that show brought in ad dollars, and then that show also brought in the lead in for the follow on show that also brought in ad dollars and all that other stuff that was directly tied to, like, we need these actors to keep this show alive. These streaming service things, that they're like, well, one show goes, we got another one in the queue. It's really not a big deal. It's not like that show drives me significant interest in subscriptions, and it's not like that subscription ties into the advertising dollars for the next show that follows it, because people just come in and go and they binge through individual shows and they're not linking it to another. Like, man, it's just it's a new game, and actors are holding out for these big contracts. You're not getting them anymore.
Well, it's also on both sides though, right? Because they're getting really shitty with how they cancel these things and how they're treating their fans, you know. So I understand that it's a business and there's contract negotiations and things like that, but they need to figure that shit out, because if you keep canceling shows like this in the middle of seasons and, you know, abandoning your fan base, people will cancel the subscriptions. We have tons of streaming options nowadays and nobody's paying for them all. So if Netflix doesn't want to get on the chopping block, you're going to have a lot of people that say flat out, like, well, why am I going to invest in any of these Netflix shows when I know they're just going to leave me high and dry?
Yeah, I mean, it's a valid point. I think they've already done the calculus here, and they've come up with a solution that their money is better spent constantly generating new content than overpaying for a series that somebody's going to watch in 2 days. And they just have to keep coming up with new content every 2 weeks. It's been said that that's Netflix's goal, is every 2 weeks to have a major new series or new movie every 2 weeks.
Yeah, but what do I care if I just know that you're going to shit the bed midway through this new series? Like, what is keeping me to even try that series if I know you're just going to fuck me in the long run? You know, so whatever you're pitching, I really don't have that much interest, because I know you're going to fucking just throw Umbrella Academy in the goddamn trash eventually. You're going to throw fucking, you know, you threw the OA in the trash. You're throwing Mindhunter in the trash, all because it doesn't hit some kind of, you know, mark. It's like they want all their subscribers to watch this show when you have genres, you have, people have different tastes. So as like Mindhunter was huge with like the true crime crowd, the drama crowd, it's not going to be the same subscribers that are watching all your comedy specials and your Schitt's Creeks and other shows like that. So it feels like they want, like, they're only going to back shows that are like Stranger Things, that hit like the whole gamut. They get that group, they get this group, they get those other two groups, and we'll invest money in that show. But unless you're able to snag every fucking audience, then you're not worth our fucking time, which is a fucked up model, because you're not, like, how many shows come along where you're grabbing the entire gamut of audiences?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the ultimate solution, but I do see the business decisions behind this, and we've talked about this in other episodes. It's going to be something that's going to have to, I guess, come to a head throughout this emerging media.
I mean, just in our group, when we shared the article, I mean, how many people were commenting like, "Oh my god, this is one of the best shows they have." Like, this is like, it is a phenomenal show. It's so high quality and so well written and acted. Like, I just, this one really shocks me. Like, I mean, not so much just because, like we said, we had talked about the story about how they really, as a show, didn't have their shit together, you know, so I'm not putting this all on Netflix, but like, the fact that they didn't put any effort into really fixing it when they had the chance shows that they're willing to just let anything go. They don't give a shit.
Yeah. Well, you know, we can go with talking about the other streaming service that seems to want to put money, at least at this point in their journey, into some bigger shows, as we see with Disney Plus, you know, the money and stuff they've contributed to Mandalorian and getting high quality, you know, Jon Favreau to produce it and be the showrunner, and then now we're getting a new series in the enchanting world of Willow.
Man, give me a chubby Val Kilmer, I'm down.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really curious on what I think. You know, Disney Plus is, I think, on the opposite side of Netflix. No, Disney Plus just wants to put out like the highest level content possible. You know, to the point that I know it's not cheap for them to bring back Ron Howard to direct and produce a TV series on Disney Plus. That's not cheap, but they're going for it to bring Willow back into a series, but it seems like they're going to contribute the money to do it the right way.
Well, like, this gives me more faith in streaming services alone. I mean, because you have Disney throwing real money at a handful of like small shows, and their model, they realize that they have to come in a competitive market, and they're slowly rolling out these things. I mean, we have the second season of Mandalorian releasing before any of their Marvel shows have released.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're throwing money down on Willow. So obviously they're pot committed for the long haul. I don't see them pulling a lot of this Netflix shit. Same thing with like Amazon. You know, they threw $1 billion at a Lord of the Rings show before one actor was hired, before one fucking final script, any of that shit. They're like, "Oh, you want to make a Lord of the Rings show? We like TV people. here's a Billy, you know? So it's things like that that are like, okay. And I'm hoping that Netflix kind of comes around to it. But yeah, like they just threw a pile of money at a movie that came out when I was like eight.
Yeah.
like there is no new audience. Like every millennial is like, oh, you heard about this new thing, Willow, and you know, our old ass is like, new. Yeah. I've been watching midgets slide down mountains on shields for 30 years. Like, what's wrong with y'all?
Yeah, I found it for those reasons a curious choice. I don't know. Maybe there's a large section of fans clamoring for more Willow. I don't know. But either way, it's coming. Disney Plus has confirmed it and picked it up. So
I think this shows like the silent power of our generation, because we are now middle aged with a bunch of expendable money and nobody pays attention to us. Like everything's all about boomers and millennials, and we're just over here like, just throw a fucking Willow at us, you know, throw some nostalgia at us and we'll shut the fuck up and stay in the corner. Like, yeah. That's what I feel like it's happening here.
All right, well, let's see if it works.
Just throw me some 8-bit sounds and some nostalgia, and we'll sit in a corner and let y'all old people and young people duke it out.
Well, I mean, yeah, for our generation, there's more news coming, I guess, in the next story with gaming. And you know, one of the big games as we were hitting adulthood is Halo, and the Halo Master Chief Collection has been confirmed by Xbox that it will run at 4K 120 FPS on Series X and S, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah, I feel like I'm gonna get motion sickness driving a Warthog.
Yeah, I don't even know what that's going to look like, and how drastic of an improvement is that going to be from what it has. But either way, it's confirmed, you know, that Series X, Series S, they're putting in the work to bring in the greatest resolution and frames per second that they can put together.
My 4K TV is only 60 hertz, so I have to upgrade that thing at some point, because I really want to see what this is like. I have 120 FPS TV, but it's only 1080p. And I remember when I first got that thing, just the smoothness, it takes a while for your eyes to adjust. So when I first got the TV, it was like, holy shit, like this feels like really, really weird, you know? And then you watch it for a while and you get adjusted to it. But then everywhere I go, everybody else's TV looks like shit. So yeah. I would leave my house and someone would be like, hey, look at this, looks new TV I got, like blah blah blah, it's, you know, 55-inch, 60-inch, da, 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 da. And I'd be like, oh man, how much you pay for this thing? And then they'd come over to my house and be like, no, you're right, like why does my TV look like shit? And it's like, man, that frame rate is just, it's disgusting. Like it just makes everything like so much smoother and crisper. So like, yeah, I'm really looking forward to gaming in it. I'm not willing to sacrifice the 4K, and I want the 120. So I'm not just going to go back and forth in TVs. I'm going to have to at some point find something on sale, bastards.
Well, I'll just keep my TV off when you come visit, and not offend your visual pretentiousness there, I guess. And we'll go ahead and just not watch TV.
I like what I like, man.
And then yeah, really the only other things coming out of gaming news that we're highlighting is this new streaming stick, potentially for Xbox Game Pass.
We've talked about when that horrible Stadia experiment was going on, you know, PlayStation and Xbox were rushing to get to cloud gaming. I can see this, you know, there's a lot of people that aren't going to have the multiple hundreds of dollars to drop on a new console. So, I mean, if all you're wanting to do is play like Game Pass games and some old retro stuff or some arcade style games that don't really take a lot of computing power to process, then, I mean, this is good. I like the fact that they're trying to include every type of gamer. The elitist that will spend another $1,000 on a TV just to go with his system, or the, you know, the kid that doesn't have much and just wants to be a part of the gaming community. They're providing as many options as they can for everybody to be a gamer. And I respect that.
Yeah. I mean, the I think everybody's going to continue to try this, you know, cloud gaming services, the streaming gaming services, try to get into streaming gaming. You know, the Amazon announced, you know, a while ago, their Luna project, their Luna gaming. So they have their own dedicated controller you can buy on Amazon, and for $6 a month, get access to Luna Plus, which has, you know, dozens of games that you can play, some of them like Assassin's Creed and like Overcooked, smaller games like Overcooked, larger games like Assassin's Creed, Valhalla and stuff like that. And you can do that for $6 a month. I haven't seen any reviews. I don't know anybody who's actually even played Luna, just like Stadia. I don't know anybody who actually games on Stadia.
Yeah, my controller sits and collects dust, that piece of shit.
Yeah, so I don't know who's getting into these things now.
Well, and they got a really kind of fucked up business model too, so I don't know how all these are going to go. You know, Game Pass, you're going to get the streaming stick and you're going to get access to Game Pass as long as you pay the monthly for Game Pass. But what's really fucked up about cloud gaming that I found is that they charge you full price for say an Assassin's Creed Valhalla. So I have the Stadia. Say I really wanted to play Valhalla and I pay the $59.99.
Yeah.
If I don't pay that $10 a month, I don't have access to my $60 fucking game.
Yeah.
So, like, is it really worth it in the long run? So I'm going to pay you the same amount for the game as a hard disk or a version that I can download on Xbox or PlayStation. I'm going to pay you that same amount. But now I am stuck paying you $10 a month or whatever other systems are charging per month in perpetuity as long as I want to play that game. So granted, it's going to take, you know, fucking 3 years to equal what it would cost to buy a console. But after 3 years of playing Stadia, you might as well have bought a fucking console.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, the only real benefit would be is if it was, yeah, regularly updating new games and it was constantly, but Stadia's just not there. So
I mean, I see it working with like an Xbox, just because, you know, the streaming stick could be my travel thing. So I have a USB and a controller. I put it in my bag and I could play video games at any hotel, any, you know what I mean? Like I could bring it to your house very conveniently. It's essentially my traveling Xbox. You know, so I do see some benefits in having something like that, to whereas I can just throw a USB stick and a controller in my bag and I can play my favorite games on location wherever I want. You know, there are a lot of people that travel that are gamers. I see the benefits in that. But when you have that, you're essentially paying for the USB and the controller one time. And that has its own value. You're paying for Game Pass anyways because you get to play those games on your console, on your, you know what I mean? It's not,
yeah,
it's not choked into that one realm where I have to, yeah, I don't know. I just, the pricing model for the cloud gaming doesn't seem beneficial to me.
I don't think it's there. You know, we'll see, you know, maybe Luna when it comes out, because it's only for like early access beta type stuff right now. Maybe when it comes out, it'll be better than Stadia. I think Stadia like rushed to market, and I think they almost like ruined people's then expectations for cloud gaming. So we'll see. I think I'm certain there's still a future for
like
cloud gaming.
There's like developers that don't work for Google that were really like pitching cloud gaming, and then when Stadia came out, they're you fucking dicks. Like,
yeah.
You just ruined everything I've been working towards.
Now everybody who comes next has to explain why they're not Stadia.
Why they're not Stadia, yeah. It's like no, we're going to do it better. Like, I promise. It's not going to be as bad. Like, I fired it up the other day, like a month ago, 2 months ago, just for shits and gigs, and like, yeah, it just doesn't run right, man. And I got it hardwired. I got it, like, I did all the extra bullshit that you're supposed to do to keep it running that they did not advertise, and it's just still shit.
Well, let's move on from the shit, and I guess we can jump out of our entertainment, gaming, whatever else, and start with some tech. And the big tech story that I just wanted to lead with this week was this Justice Department filing a antitrust case against Google. So, you know, this is the first real antitrust case since like 2001 that they did against Microsoft. It's really the first time that you see these big internet companies in any way targeted by any type of antitrust. And everybody knew it was coming. They did that big hearing a couple months ago where they brought in the heads of Google, Apple, Facebook, and they grilled them down on antitrust practices. And that was the focus of the hearing, or the focus of them bringing together like Senate committee. And Google's the first one to receive. I think the other ones are probably somewhere in the future.
They're coming.
I'm certain the conversation was like, hey, one of these is going to get heard before the election.
Yeah, especially depending on how this election goes, it might be time to divest from your tech stocks. it might be the beginning of the end.
And, you know, so this first one being heard is looking at Google, a hearing against Google and their antitrust or anti-competitive behavior, specifically about search engine. And
yeah. This is what's interesting. It's not about the companies that are essentially buying up. It's more about their control of information.
Yeah, and it's just saying that it's the deals that they've made make it to where, you know, the fact that they own Google Chrome and it comes preloaded with Google as the default search engine is an issue that's anti-competitive. The fact that they pay billions of dollars to Apple to make Google the default search engine on all Apple devices is anti-competitive. It really just comes down to the fact that they're saying that, or the government is alleging that they are participating in practices that are making it to where no other search engine or anybody else really has any type of chance to be viable. They're not wrong. You know, Google argues that today's consumers are, like, the internet's not new. So today's consumers are educated. If they wanted to try out Bing, they know how to get there. If they want to try out Yahoo search engine, they know how to get there.
Yeah, but they're neglecting the fact that the internet is still new. Like, it's not new, but it doesn't have the plastic on it, but you still want people to take their shoes off. Like, it's still pretty fucking new in the relative to our society. And Google was the first to market. Like, Google is a fucking verb. When your company is a fucking verb, like, that says a lot. You know what I mean? Like, so
yeah.
They really never... I mean, yes, there's the Bings and there's other search engines. What was it? Ask Jeeves. You know, like, but they were never going to catch on because it took them so long to even get to a place to be competitive. By that time, Google had already become the monster that it was on its way to become, and they had the power to essentially corner the market, you know, from day one.
Well, and it's a nasty cycle when you look at Google and the way Google practices, because of how dominant like Gmail is and how dominant Google Maps is and all of these services that they have. They all feed back into each other, which means that Google's like, have you ever tried to look for something on Bing or any of these? Like, try it. Like, next time you want to know something and you got to, hey, I want to figure out some quick answer. Of course, I'm going to Google it. Before you go to Google, type in whatever question you would ask in Bing and see the search results you get. And then you're going to realize, you're going to look and be like, none of this is relevant. Like, none of this explains what I'm looking for. And then type into Google, you're going to get the response. And it's because, you know, Google has all of these touch points because they're the most dominant service, because they have Google Chrome and they're capturing all the data that anybody's putting into their browser, period. They have,
well, not just the browser. They're scanning your emails. They're scanning. Yeah. They're scanning everything. They're getting all the data points.
So that, that's exactly it. So they have way more accurate points. So their search is way more accurate. They also have more points on individuals. So their advertisements and the sponsored posts and the things that they bring are way more accurate and tailored to the individual. So this is one of the cases. It's weird in the sense that, like, antitrust, you know, you think of like antitrust in history class and you're looking at, like, you know, the breakup of, you know, the Rockefellers and these big companies and the fact that, like, they had anti-competitive practices that allowed them to hold the market on pricing and everything else. The thing with Google and these tech companies is their anti-competitive practices is what's allowing them to bring together better products and free products to the consumers. So it's actually not necessarily in the consumer interest that Google gets broken up, because that maybe comes, you know, maybe down the road, if you really break up Google and you break up all of their sectors.
Well, it's not in the consumer's interest now, but it is choking innovation. It is choking competitive. So the competitiveness that antitrust protects has always been good for society. when you have multiple companies making the same type of widget, they're in a constant race to make it cheaper, better, and all these aspects that are better for consumers. With Google controlling as much as they can, yes, right now they may be staying ahead of the game and bringing all these services to fruition for consumers to use, but eventually it might not be in our best interest.
Yeah, but the immediate effect is negative to pricing for consumers, which is the opposite of normal antitrust issues. And that's really where this is a difficult thing for like the Justice Department or anybody else to really rule on, because yeah, they have to have that long vision on innovation and all these other things, but not necessarily current consumer practices. Because again, like, you know, one of the breakups that people have talked about is that maybe Google might have to be broken up from Android. Android can't be owned by Google. They're going to have to sell that off. Well, Android in itself, it's not like they're selling the rights to Android software to these cell phone companies at a high premium. No, they're making their money back on Android by forcing people back into Alphabet, by forcing people back into the Google search engines and all of the Google system. So if you separate that, then how do you make Android its own profitable company? Well, now cell phone companies are going to have to get charged more money to put Android on their thing. It's going to cause consumers to pay more money for anything that's Android. Same thing with if you break Gmail, if you break Chrome and all these other things from that ecosystem of Google, well, now those things have to be profitable. Yeah,
and that's what I mean. In like the short term, it's not going to be good for us. But once you break them up and you make certain aspects that they are giving away for free a profitable endeavor, you are going to have other people that are looking to get in on that piece of the pie. And we may get some better innovation in the next 5-10 years because we stopped Google from just eating up all the air in the room and making it so that developers and competitive companies don't even want to fucking try. They're like such a behemoth that, you know, nah, fuck it. Like, why? Like people are doing innovation just so that Google buys them out.
I was going to say people are still trying to innovate, but they're doing it not with a long run. Hey, this is how I'm going to become a profitable company. No, they do it so they can prove a concept to get to run in the negative for a little while, prove a concept and get bought.
Which is exactly kind of what antitrust is trying to stop too. You know, like antitrust wants you to have other options as a consumer, and as long as we have this thing of like, well, if I make something good, Google just buy me, I'll become rich, and then Google own it. Well, yeah, that's good for, you know, Egghead Tom, who fucking developed whatever he developed, but it ain't good for anybody else.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very difficult thing. I think under the current administration and Republican held Congress, I don't think there's any chance that this turns into anything. You know, post-election, if all of a sudden, you know, House, Senate, and presidencies all ran by Democrats, then maybe they're more likely to stick it to the tech companies. But in the end, I just don't foresee big legislative changes, big, rulings against them that's going to break up the companies. I mean, the truth is, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission has like a budget of like $400 million a year. I mean, two of the lawyers at Google are making more than that. Like the FTC does not have the power to actually go out and win this lawsuit and to press Google and break them up. This is not going to, it's not going to work in their favor unless you drastically improve and increase the capacity for the FTC to look into this, understand the ramifications of the decisions that would be made in an antitrust case, and then push for it. It's not happening. I foresee this being, a lot of news and noise. But in the end, I don't think you're breaking up Google one bit.
I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't. That's the thing. I think the election is going to have a lot to do with this. And I think public education and public sway might have a little bit to do with it, too. Just because this isn't the only company they're going to go after. They're going to go after the Amazon. They're going to go after Facebook.
Yeah. And the problem is they went off the wrong one. I think if you look at Apple, Amazon, Facebook, like Google, I think for the most part people like Google. Like,
yeah,
Google's not the evil one. That it's the other ones that
Sam Harris.
Amazon and Facebook.
Sam Harris had one of the early founders of Facebook that was that Google from day one. I can't remember dude's name.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. And yeah, he believes Google is the most threatening.
Yeah, he scared the shit out of me about Google. Like he flat out wasn't worried about Facebook, wasn't worried about any of these others, but he made Google sound like the goddamn devil.
Yeah, no, the power that Google has through what they show, like, I mean, essentially, if Google decides that the world no longer needs to know about something, they can make it happen.
Yeah, if they like, don't want the Nerd Cantina to ever exist again, they can wipe us off the face of the planet.
Yeah, you know, it's 89% of all internet traffic that goes through, you know, online search happens through Google. Like, so maybe 11% of the world might stumble across this topic, but if Google wants to isolate and to just completely delete a topic, a company, or whatever else off the earth, it's done.
Yeah, and when you have companies with political bias and profitable motives, that is not a good thing at all. Like, so this is coming down the pipeline, man. It's gonna happen. How they figure it out and how they break it up and what it breaks up into and everything, that I have no fucking clue.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're gonna take the ban hammer to a lot of these motherfuckers.
I don't know. I'm interested to see how it plays out. I'm looking to see what the next lawsuits are going to be, because I think Amazon's next.
I think
Facebook's an easy target, but when you look at anti-competitiveness, man, it's Amazon.
Yeah,
when
but look Facebook gets and, all the hate. Facebook gets all the hate, and it's really a home run for any politician, like that Judiciary Committee and everything. They're just gonna love beating the shit out of Zuck.
Yeah, no, I think that's true, but I think Amazon's definitely got a
especially depending on how this election goes, you're gonna have a lot of new senators, a lot of new representatives are looking to make a name out of themselves. They're gonna want that sound bite. They're gonna want that YouTube clip. They're gonna want to be shared by the Huff Post and the Daily Mail and all that shit. And they're gonna go hard on these motherfuckers. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. They're still set to be seen in Congress. I think here in a couple weeks, or a week, not on anti-competitiveness, but different topics. But either way, you know, we've got some CEOs going into Senate hearing here soon. But I guess we can move on. Let's just talk about other interesting things in tech. And hey, you see this, new GMC Hummer EV coming out.
Yeah, I'm gonna make a few people mad right now. I know that
from the epitome of the, you know, fuck your environment,
yeah.
1990s, H2, running around with, you know, the mom just doing grocery runs, getting 4 miles to the gallon.
Yeah.
And in her like luxury.
Those things like sprayed aerosol cans as you drove them down the street. That's how bad they were for the fucking environment.
And then now we're rebranding it as one of the first pure EV trucks that'll actually, like, you can pre-order it and, you know, looking at it, being available in 2021, which we still don't know where, like, Cybertruck and stuff like that isn't even going to be started to be made until 2021. Who the hell knows when the first Cybertruck actually is sold?
Well, they took pre-orders. I got a buddy to pre-order, put the deposit down on one. Yeah,
it just same thing with all the Teslas. Yeah, you could pre-order it, but Elon's not guaranteeing it to you at any point in time.
I find this really fucked up. Like you said, they were the epitome of fuck your MPGs. Like, you know, and honestly, you know, if you ever owned that yellow H2, you are a fucking, like, go fucking kill yourself. Like that was the worst, you know, some motherfucker with projection issues that had all kinds of insecurities went straight to that Hummer dealership and bought that yellow H2. You know, and I just, yeah, now you want to come to the other side and show how conscious you are. Like, it's like the dickhead in cowboy boots that gave no fucks and had Exxon stock all of a sudden got woke and now wants to do the same, but look how green I am. Like, no, you're that same little weaned dickhead that went and bought that fucking yellow H2. Fuck you.
Well, I mean, I think, yes. So the fact that they chose to revive, like, GMC for really their first full EV truck, that they chose to revive this one. I think it's laughable. I think just the whole branding of it, of like, all right, let's bring back the Hummer in. Well,
the campaign, the release campaign should have just been like unveiling it and been like, sorry about that last one.
Yeah, sorry.
That's all they should have did, was just rolled out this new electric one and been like, yeah, we know, we sorry.
Yeah, we recognize that. We spit in the face of every environmentalist who at that point was already talking about, you know, global warming or whatever else, and we laughed at them as we as we created the H2. So yeah, here we go.
Yeah.
But I mean, this thing is huge. I don't know if you looked at the specs of this thing, but I mean, it is massive. It's almost as large as like the GMC Yukon XL, which is a
I'm getting excited for this, because as the electric vehicles get bigger and have more capacity, like I want a electric cargo truck for my company. You know what I mean? I would love to ditch my gas guzzling, you know, GMC 1500 that holds all my tools and shit that I drive every fucking day and probably put 15,000 miles a year on. Like, I'd love if I can convert that to electric. I'm a goddamn electrician. I should have an electric fucking an electric fucking work van. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. It just makes sense. So, like, as these big trucks that have all this capability come out, like, it gives me hope that in the next couple years, I'll be able to have a nice, you know, business expense where I buy a GMC, a Chevy, whoever fucking makes it, but a cargo van that is made for holding tools and carrying around my shit.
All right. Well, let me talk over some of my favorite parts of this specific vehicle, just because it's set in the standard. You know, the Ford F-150 talk about, you know, they're in development of coming out with a fully EV or Ford F-150, but this thing's taller than the Ford F-150. It's got a wider wheelbase. It's absolutely massive. But some of the interesting things that they put in here is they're like putting in like real truck sounds into it, because it's, you know, obviously going to be one of the big complaints is the fact that,
because what's going to make my penis grow if it's that quiet? What's going to make my penis bigger if it makes no sound?
So they've got some like noise cancellation stuff in there to cancel out the electric noises, and then they're going to be essentially pumping in real noises.
It's got a fog machine in the back just so it releases fucking smoke and emissions out of the back. These fucking dickheads.
Somebody's going to put a fog machine on like a smokestack, like big, tall smokestack. Exhaust for no reason.
It's got
a haptic feedback seat. So the seat will actually like rumble and stuff like that, like it's like you would in a big diesel truck or whatever else. It's got an actual haptic seat to give you the feel of riding in a powerful truck, because it's got it's got significant torque in it, but you're just not going to really feel it. So it's adding in all of these things. You know, it's got about
optional 300. Don't tread on me flag comes with it when you fucking buy it. Like, anybody who cares about this shit, you are the worst. Like, you are the absolute fucking worst.
There's enough people to care about it because, you know, they're designing it. But, I mean, it's got a decent range of, like, 350 miles. And then it can go 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. And there's a like, a mode that you have to go in and put it in. And its mode is called the watts to freedom mode that you have to turn it down to for the power button. This is not a joke at all. So you have to turn it into the watts to freedom mode, which is,
in the minute you hit the button, it's like a bald eagle screeching and fucking,
well, you know, this is where like the nerds are in the design room now. So of course they call it Watts to Freedom, so they can come up with like the acronym
They put five nerds in a room with Kid Rock. Are you fucking kidding me? Yeah. Like,
Kid Rock was like, all right, we go fast, I want to call it WTF. what acronym can we come up with? WTF? I guess we could call it like Watts to Freedom. All right. Put me in WTF mode. And like, that's exactly what it is. You drop it into WTF mode, and it lowers the suspension. It lowers the front end of the suspension.
We've gotten to the point where people are trying to out Elon.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And like, but it's crazy what you could do in these vehicles. You know, that you could hit some buttons, go into WTF mode. It like gives you a disclaimer and asks you on the display. Then you have to acknowledge and hit a button that says that you're about to do something crazy. Like literally it's a button that says that you acknowledge you're doing something crazy. And then it drops it into WTF mode and it does like aggressive cooling on the battery. It does all kinds of things in order to get you for this brief moment of time to put in this mode so you can go to 0 to 60 in 3 seconds in a fucking Hummer. Like it's absurd.
Oh my God. Like this is like... It's so sad that I understand why they had to do this. Like the fact that this all exists and there's just such a large portion of this country that this is why they'll buy it.
Yeah. They'll never respect the electric vehicle just because of its capability and stuff like that. No, they will only respect it. They will only get rid of their smokestack diesel fucking, you know, black cloud, you know, throwing truck. Because they can go in WTF mode and go,
man,
that's it. So it's wild. But whatever,
it's got a Budweiser cannon on the side, so you can shoot beer cans to your buddies from the driveway. like this is out of like some SNL skit, bro. Like,
oh, 100%, this is, yeah, I think it's great though. It's phenomenal. Yeah, if you got $115,000,
I mean, yeah, I want to see it in person, but I just hope it's not because any of my dipshit friends bought one. Because I will roast you. I will roast you so hard.
You can roast them before or after you ask for a ride, though. Like, I'm still going to ride in this thing.
The car. While I'm in the car riding in it, I will be roasting the shit out of you.
Well, I would love to be in a Hummer going into WTF mode. So hopefully somebody rolls around in the neighborhood in one of them. But man, it's still
lots to freedom. Like that is just, I don't think I'm gonna hear anything better all week. Like that just took the cake.
Yeah. Well, all right, let's see if we could, I guess we set the bar too high for the rest of the episode here.
Yeah.
Let's see if we could beat Watts to Freedom on some of these other tech stories here. But we'll jump out of electric vehicles into, we've got a couple different things in kind of tech news in the hacking realm, in the cyber crimes realm. I guess we can go negative first. Let's end on a positive note, I guess, in hacking. We'll go negative. And it's this last week, we had the FBI make a statement about 5 days ago, 4 days ago, on Iran and Russian interference in U.S. voter registration data, sending out emails to individuals threatening them if they go to the polls, they're going to get, you know, I know where you live if you go vote against Trump, and all kinds of weird emails that people were receiving that were linked back to Iran and Russia, other issues with trying to directly target and influence voters, knowing what parties people are affiliated to, having their email addresses, their physical addresses, voter registration data that was obtained by Iran and Russia. It's like, man,
this government just fails so hard.
These things, and it's a matter of, you know, if somebody works hard enough, they're eventually going to get access to these systems. And I don't know if this is a weird world, and you know, this is, you know, comes down to, you know, some of the questions on, you know, people are just find it crazy. How can we not vote online and stuff? It's like, well, it's not that easy. There's almost no way to make a system that you're going to run your democracy through that's never going to be penetrated.
At the same time, look how hard people are trying to discredit mail-in voting and done for 100 years. So what's the difference?
Let's not go down that road.
But I'm just saying, so like, you want to shit on online voting? Well, they're shitting on paper ballots right now too. So people are just going to shit on voting, period. I at least want it to be up to date and more convenient. You know, this is just so fucked. You know, the fact that people can get this registration information is beyond fucked up. You know, I don't give my information to the government for this purpose at all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you wonder why people go off in tinfoil hats and live in the woods. You know, it's because of this shit, you know, and you think people talk about it like it's some conspiracy theory. Like, no, this shit is really happening. Like, people really are enjoying fucking with our country right now.
Yeah. I mean, this is definitely a big concern. And I think, I guess I was just waiting for this information to come out. I thought it would come out after the election, but there was no way we were going to make it through a 2020 election and not have, you know, foreign interference as a part of this conversation. There was no way. I just thought it wasn't going to necessarily be revealed and acknowledged until after the election. And it was going to be like in hindsight, like, oh, okay, here's where we've now caught that they've fucked with the election. The fact that, you know, 2 weeks prior to the election, it's well known that, hey, Iran and Russia have data. Like we are tracking cases of registered Democrats receiving emails saying, like, if you go vote for Trump, you know, we're coming to your house or whatever else. And I think it was actually the other side. Actually, I think it was if you go vote for Trump, we're going to come to your house. And you know, who the hell knows what the reasoning and meaning is, you know, is it really to try to sway votes? Because who's actually looking at those emails and thinking, oh, I'm not going to go vote now, or is it more just really like, just to demonstrate how inept our voting system is and our democracy is. And I mean,
it's gotten to the point where email is no longer an effective form to communicate with me because I don't check my email for shit anymore. It's nothing but fucking spam and scams. And like, so if you are actually trying to send me a document I need to read, you need to email it to me and then text me that you sent it and I should look for it, because I am not, when that bing goes off, I want to say, like, where's my phone? I'm looking at my phone right now. I have 13,182 unopened emails.
Hurts my soul.
That's a big red number on my email folder right there. I don't give a fuck. I'm not checking none of that shit. It's all garbage.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's definitely a big concern.
Well, and it feels like neither party wants to fix this, because they're just, at some point, it'll benefit my party. You know, right now, it benefits this party. And then at some point, it might benefit my party. It's like neither one of them want to fix the glaring problems in our government when it comes to espionage and these tech issues, because at some point, it might help them.
Maybe. Well, you know, we could always, I guess, call in the National Guard to shore up our cyber criminals. This is a weird story coming out of Reuters. But Louisiana, over the last couple of weeks leading up to election, they've had their government systems receive a ton of different probes of cyber attacks. And apparently they've called in the National Guard to help assist with the rise in cyber attacks against their systems, government systems.
Is that really who we should be calling? Like, is that really who we call?
Yeah, I'm just thinking of a bunch of weekenders coming out there just, I don't know, shooting at servers with the,
you know, yeah, like what the fuck? Like, I'm sure, like, this is a group that I don't want to offend, you know what I mean? But I'm going to, like you're volunteering, you know, to try to do some good, and you know, some of you might be plebes that just couldn't hack it in the regular military. I don't know. I want to give you guys the benefit of the doubt and say there's some huge benefit to our country and your lives that made you sign up. But I'm sorry, you're the last person I'm going to think about when I have IT fucking problems. Okay.
Now, to give actual real context, it's a very small groups of units that have cyber capabilities in the National Guard, but there are some that have cyber offensive and cyber defensive capabilities. So it's not like they called in hundreds of thousands of people in the National Guard and they're, you know, standing on the streets or whatever else defeating cyber crimes, but they are using the cyber defensive tools that the National Guard is trained on to hopefully assist them in shoring up their systems. And I mean, the truth is the military as a whole has a pretty robust cyber offense and cyber defensive capability. So I don't know how good the National Guard is at it compared to active duty forces. But again, the states own the National Guard, so the states can request and get that assistance. So I think, you know, I actually, like, if my state was being hacked and the government systems were being hacked, like, this is definitely something that I would support.
Honestly,
like,
honestly, I
do
think,
whatever you can.
Honestly, I think we need a sixth branch of military that is specifically digital.
Cyber force.
Yeah. Fucking TM. Fucking TM. fucking TM. Trademark that shit. Like, lock it fucking down before they fucking take it. I want that payday.
Go get that domain.
But honestly, air, sea, land, sure, you know, we got space now. Why do we not just have one division? I mean, the FBI is mainly what we use.
So every branch of the military has their own cyber division.
Why not? Why not make it? Why not just condense that all into a cyber branch of the military? Headhunt all the eggheads. You know, people can sign up for the cyber force and do a 5 to 6 year stint for the military, hone their tech skills, and then leave and get a really good fucking tech job. You know what I mean? Just treat it like every other thing, you know, aspect of the military. People join the military to better their future. You know, we're not asking, you know, all the best eggheads in the country to come and stay with the government forever. But hey, man, come out of high school with a little bit of coding experience, go into cyber force, we'll train you on all this shit. And then when you leave, you can get a job at Google. You can get a job at fucking, you know, Facebook, whatever, and have, you know, but at least we get 5-6 years of some of the top brains and, you know, specifically trained people to do this shit.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It might happen eventually, but I mean, I'll say, like, you know, a private in the army, he's making like $13,000 a year. I don't think you're enticing too many people out of the tech sector for that.
But
so they'd have to come up with a new structure.
Well, so you get them before they hit the tech center. So essentially you're getting a $15,000 a year paid internship to graduate at 24 and go off into the tech sector and make six figures a year.
Yeah.
I mean, people are going to the military to learn how to become mechanics, motherfucker. Let's not act like every branch of the military is churning out six-figure jobs when they leave. There are plenty of people that go into the military to learn how to be mechanics, electricians, fucking, you know, all kinds of regular skill jobs when they leave. You know, why should tech be any different?
Yeah. Well, for the sake, let's move on to, I guess, the last bit in hacking, which is just an interesting story that, you know, I guess maybe not all hacking is bad, as we've got some Robin Hood hackers. I mean, Robin Hood, the app, did get hacked a couple of weeks ago, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a hacking group
one that we talked about a few weeks ago,
giving to charity. Dark Side? The Dark Side hacking group is now considering themselves a big game hunter, that they're only going after the largest and most profitable companies with ransomware, and that they are donating a portion of their proceeds to charity. So it's a modern day Robin Hood.
Get the fuck out of here.
It's a modern day Robin Hood. It's a good story.
I've got some business tips from people before that say, you know, market that you're donating a portion of your profits to this blah, blah, blah. And then you donate like 2 cents because it was a portion of your profits. Technically, you're not lying. Like, fuck these dickheads.
They didn't even donate a full Bitcoin.
Yeah.
they donated 0.88 of a Bitcoin to a couple charities. And like, the fact that they did this it's laughable. You know, you're doing cybercrime. Who knows how much money you took from, you know, Garmin and these other big companies that you're going after. And then
you took $5 million and you gave away fucking 50 grand.
You gave away the equivalent of 10 grand to each charitable organization. But the very fact that they needed it, that they felt the need to take credit for it, and they've been publicly posting receipts of their charitable donations, makes it illegal for those charities to keep the donations. So now they have to turn those donations over to the FBI.
You fucking dummies.
Because now they have knowingly received donations from a criminal enterprise. So now it's made it to where, like, just because they have this need to get credit as this, you know, altruistic hacking group, they have made it to where those charitable donations are just thrown away money that are in the hands of the government now.
Yeah, fuck these dudes, man.
Because posting the receipts that they actually donated to Children International and the Water Project and these other charities that they donated to, those charities they're obliged now to turn that money over to the FBI.
Lock them up.
So that's a failed experiment there. So, Dark Side, go fuck yourself. Nobody's impressed. Nobody thinks you're doing good for the world here. All right. And then I guess we can run through quickly here.
Some space
stuff. We've got, some good news coming out of SpaceX. And since it's one of the things that we hoped that they were going to do is bring, you know, internet to rural communities that are in need. And right now, SpaceX and Starlink can only really support internet in the northern portions of like U.S. and Canada. But by next year, I think they're close to like 1,000 satellites now already in orbit. And by next year, they're going to be able to bring it down to like Texas. And they've already signed on to help some rural town in Texas or county in Texas that it's like a staggering number of like nearly 40% or like 39% of the children in that school district have no access to internet. Or broadband internet in this rural community, but they're all at home, homeschooling, COVID stuff. Like this is a time that like internet is a standard that everybody needs to have, and they've signed on to do it for free for this this community as a
COVID definitely showed a glaring gap in our internet needs for the community. If things are going to be happening the way they've happened over the last 6 months, we as a nation need to provide a standard. Internet standard for not just the rural area, you know, the metropolitan areas, but also the rural areas. I'm glad Starlink is getting up and running. I'm glad that Elon's recognizing these issues and is willing to try to help a few different places. Keep shooting them in the sky, man. Let's go. Let's get it going.
Yeah. So, you know, that's a good story coming out of Starlink. And I guess an interesting story out of Starlink about more internet is Elon vowed this week to build an internet bridge to Mars and have Starlink satellites between the U.S.
We did say last week that those Martians were going to be, you know, asked out on their Pornhub.
Elon heard us. Thinks of everything.
Elon heard us.
And he vowed that a satellite constellation around Mars would be a significant priority, and that he would absolutely build an internet bridge and a way for Mars to still be interconnected here to the internet. You know, and this goes along with his vow that he will see that 1 million people are transported to Mars before 2050. You know, this dude's got some thoughts here. He's got some he's got some plans.
Smoking that good shit.
And let's see if any of it happens. But I guess it's, you know, he's not just thinking about the Starship to get him there. He's fully on board with how to create an actual society on Mars. And then I guess we could just go with the last piece of space news here as the final topic. And that was a big win for NASA. You know, maybe less of a win. We'll see in the end when they land. But NASA was able to land a probe on the Bennu asteroid and gather some samples from the metals and materials on the asteroid. And, you know, it was... If you watched like the people like the nerds and stuff that exist, like the control stations for NASA and are part of these things, like they were so pumped. They spend so much time developing these things, putting together these probes, putting together these missions, you know, and they wait years for the payoff. And they finally get the payoff of the drone successfully landing on the asteroid. I think it was there for 2 days. They had to dig in a couple centimeters into the asteroid and was able to gather like 60 grams of metals and material from the asteroid. The only really downside to it is that in transport, they realized like it was losing some of the material it had captured. And I think like one of the bigger samples that it collected kind of was prying open one of the seals, and they were bleeding out some of the materials that were captured. So they're hoping to get back as much as possible and kind of speed up the timeline of recovery.
And this is where I feel bad for these NASA eggheads, because, you know, we've gotten so accustomed to NASA just being pinpoint on everything. It's like when they do something really cool like this, we're just like, oh, good. You guys did what you said you were going to do. Like, you're NASA. Like, good for you. And then when they shit the bed on something goes wrong, we fucking just roast them. Like, oh, you fucking, look at all these rocket scientists can't even fucking land a probe on an asteroid, you fucking dicks. It's like, so they get all of the hate and really no of the accolades. You know, they're, like you said, they spend years trying to do this, like, incredibly difficult thing, because none of us plebes can grasp exactly how hard all this shit really is. You know, we simplify it in our brains to the extent of just being something simple. And when they do it, we're just like, oh, good for you. Like, you know, it's like making a free throw. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, good. You know, but really, this is kind of crazy.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be cool. I mean, whatever, they lost maybe a gram or two or a couple grams of samples. That just means, you know, less samples go to the Smithsonian, and it all stays with NASA for research and study. Japan's recently done something similar. I think in 2019, Japan did something where they docked on an asteroid and essentially shot it with like a bullet and captured the shrapnel with some type of drone. This is definitely an area that the international body space communities are looking to do, is just get more data, find out what kind of minerals and materials are on asteroids, as somewhere in the future, asteroid mining and asteroid collection is going to be, you know, for the precious metals and things that exist, that's going to be a profitable endeavor for private space industry. So I'm sure like Elon is out there wondering exactly what metals they come back with so he can decide whether, you know, his Blue Origin company is going to start going out and mining whatever they get off of an asteroid. But I think that's weekend news for us here.
Yep, that'll do it.
So, as always, thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoyed. We hope you join over at the community over at thenerdcantina.com/community. Good conversations taking place over there over in the Facebook group. But most importantly, hey, please give us a rating, review, like, subscribe, things, all
you
things
know
Nerd
you
Cantina.
You know the deal.
You know the deal. You know what all of us podcasters beg for, and there's a reason for it. It helps. So go out and do those things.
And keep listening to the show, because we'll be back next week.
All right. Well, that's all it said. We'll talk to you again next week, nerds.
See ya.